the story of Job. 40 long chapters of a dialogue, mostly between Job and his friends. Job, of course, is a story that says to us, even when there's another theology going on in Scripture that says, if you are a good person, you will be blessed by God. But Job has something else to say. The writer of Job has this to say, and Job says, you can be the best person in the world and still difficult things will happen. We will still suffer, even if we are good people. And so what happens is God and HaSatan, or Satan as we often call him, get into a little dialogue where Satan says to God, I bet if you did something to Job and took away all that he has been given, Job will curse you to your face. And God says, I don't think he will, but have at her. Give it a try. So he does. Job loses everything he has except his wife. He loses his family. He loses all his wealth, his livelihood, everything he has. And still, Job praises God. Satan comes back to God and says, I bet though if he did something to him personally, hurt him, he would curse you to your face. And God said, I don't think so, but give it a try. And so Job was smitten with boils from head to toe. And even in his agony, he did not curse God. While he was there sitting grieving all that he lost in an ash heap, it says, his three friends come along and sit with him for 7 days, not saying anything in the midst of his grief and pain. They just sat there with him 7 days and 7 nights, it says. After that 7 days, Job obviously processed some stuff and says, opens his mouth and says, man, I wish I hadn't been born. This is really bad. Really bad. I am suffering. And his friends, instead of sitting there and hearing it, decided they would open their mouths too, and that's the biggest mistake they made. Because for 31 chapters then, what happens in the story of Job is the friends say to Job after he says, I wish this hadn't happened. I wish I hadn't been born. This is horrible what has happened. And they say to him all kinds of horrible things. This begins bad pastoral care and bad theology. And back and forth go Job and his friends, where the friends will say, Job, you must have done something wrong to deserve this. And Job said, I didn't. And they said, well, all humans are imperfect, so God's ways are best. And Job says, no, I didn't do anything. I did not deserve this. And so back and forth, for 31 long chapters, they keep saying these things to Job. And Job keeps denying them. Until finally, God had had enough. And God enters into the conversation and says, stop. Job. He talks to Job first. And he says, Job, did you set the world in motion? Do you know why the lions roar? Do you know why the mountain goats give birth? Do you know how the sun comes up at the beginning of the day? Did you set everything in its place? And Job says, no. And he's oddly comforted by this and says, no, I don't know. I don't know those things. And God says, well, I do. So just wait and see. But God also says to Job's friends, you have spoken wrongly to Job. You have said the wrong things. Job was innocent. Job didn't do anything wrong. So stop. And then what happens is God restores to Job everything he had had before and more. In fact, he doubles what Job had before. And yet, Job continued to grieve what he had lost. God has blessed him. God has put things in place that Job knows nothing about. We suffer for no good reason sometimes. And sometimes we're just going to have to trust. May God help us to take to heart these words from our Holy Scripture. Several years ago, I walked into a place where I knew that a terrible tragedy had just taken place, and a young life had just been lost. And when the sister of the young man who had died saw me, she crumpled to the floor and wept, a broken pile of grief. I had no words. So I just sank to the floor beside her and gathered her up in my arms to hold her while she sobbed and just continued to say over and over and over again, why? 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 And I still had no words. I could only be present to her grief, even as my own heart broke for her loss and her pain. We cannot escape grief. It touches us all at some point. Just this morning I was reading about the service yesterday that took place in Halifax for the 7 young children. Some of us even now are pretty raw with our own grief. And we cannot escape the grief of others. For if we love, we will suffer when other people experience loss. This month, as we have explored the theme of death and grief, we have talked about the inevitability of death and the grief that we all experience. So today I want to conclude this series by talking about how to deal with others' grief. How we can bring hope and healing into another's life as they journey through their pain, even as we recognize that everyone's journey is uniquely their own. C.S. Lewis, the great 20th century Christian writer and poet who wrote, among other things, the Narnia Tales, was racked with grief when his beloved wife, Joy, who he had met later in life and married later in life, died of cancer just 4 years after they were married. And he wrote this in his journal. I thought I could describe a state. I could make a map of sorrow and figure it out. Big intellectual. I thought I could figure this out, make a map of sorrow. Sorrow, however, turns out to be not a state, but a process. We have to work through it. Grief takes time. It doesn't happen in a week or a month or a year. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, who is the preeminent 20th century psychiatrist and grief specialist who wrote extensively on grief and even the stages of grief, said this: the reality is that we will grieve forever. You will not get over the loss of a loved one. You will learn to live with it. You will heal and you will rebuild yourself around the loss you have suffered. You will be whole again, but you will never be the same, nor should you be the same, nor would you want to. We never get over major losses in our life. We learn to live with them. We will feel love and life again. But we need to seek out people who will help us to move through the process well so we can be whole and healthy and fully alive again, knowing that there will always be a place in our heart where we will feel the pain and losses of our lives. Because whole, meaningful lives mean that we embrace everything in our lives and everything that we are so that we can live more rich and full lives. So I'm going to talk just a few moments now about how we can help others who are walking through their grief. In my experience, there are 3 types of reactions or models when it comes to addressing other other people's pain and grief. There are the avoiders, the fixers, and the comforters. And sometimes we can be all three. Avoiders are those people who don't know what to say. And so they stay away from the person who is grieving or struggling. They're often uncomfortable with their own feelings, and so they don't know what to do with other people's feelings. They can hurt or damage their relationships because they don't show up. And many of us don't understand why our closest friends and family don't show up when we're going through difficult times. I read this week that as many as 75% of people will not show up to another person when they're suffering. As many as 75. They won't be there. Fixers. We fall into this habit sometimes. Fixers are those who come along and want everything to be better. They try to fix or take away the pain, not realizing that they can't. There's nothing they can do. But they don't want anyone to feel bad, so they try to keep their best to keep things light and positive. And in this case, it's about their own feelings of wanting to be helpful and to feel better. We really seem to have a difficult time as humans dealing with painful emotions or situations. We want to avoid or wipe them away so we can feel good again. But this is a denial of the reality of life. While fixers are trying to help, they may strain their relationship because they are not allowing normal feelings of sadness or anger, guilt, fear, confusion, or shock, which are all normal. Fixers just have a need to make things better. Comforters, though, they get it. They will be calm, non-anxious, unobtrusive people just being present, doing what is needed or simply sitting by to listen or to offer a hand or a shoulder because they know that there are no words. Because grief hits the heart and words cannot touch the heart. Comforters will be at ease in silence and present to the pain no matter how heavy it is, not trying to avoid it or take it away. It's not to say that comforters don't do or say some silly things sometimes. I've done it, believe me, lots of times. We all do in the face of someone else's suffering. But we all struggle with pain. And sometimes someone else's pain can feel even worse than our own, especially if it's someone we love deeply. I have been with people who have struggled deeply when their children or spouse or parents or siblings are going through the inevitable struggles that life will hand us. We hate seeing someone we love suffer. But it is in those moments that we can make the choice to either avoid, to fix, or to comfort. What is it that you want in those moments? Let's get better at caring for others in ways that shows God's love and compassion. As Christians, as people of love, who love, as human beings, we need to show up and we need to learn how to walk with others as they suffer. It is the most compassionate and most healing thing that we can do in people's lives. And let's learn how to connect with people at a heart level and not with our heads so that we can bring hope and healing and wholeness into people's lives and into the world. So when Job's friends show up, they show up, first of all, as comforters. For 7 days, they sit with Job in his sorrow and in his loss, not saying a word as he struggled through his pain and his wrenching sorrow. They just sat with him, having the courage to just sit with no words, just to be present with him. This is possibly the most healing thing that we can do for people. Be with them day after day as they struggle through the myriad of feelings and thoughts we all wrestle with in those interminable moments and days and weeks and months and years after we have suffered. We can be God with skin on, willing to be present to the pain and not avoid it or try to fix it. And it can be heavy at some times, and we can just be there for people. Job's friends started out well, but when Job cried out and had something to say, They were going to try to explain it. They were going to try to fix the situation, try to get to see him, try to get him to see the error of his ways. And they did a pretty poor job of it, as the author meant them to. For 31 chapters, they spoke bad theology and practice, bad pastoral care, until we just want to scream, enough, I can't listen to it anymore. It's not helpful, and it's just causing more pain. The author wanted us to see how useless words were in the face of devastating pain and loss. We all do it sometimes. I know I have, not meaning to. We are insensitive to others' pain and say or do the wrong things, sometimes because we don't know better. But let's not pretend that we all don't deserve a reward sometimes for sticking our foot in our mouth. For 31 chapters, Job's friends said things that we've all either said ourselves or heard. And since I didn't read you those chapters, thank goodness, I thought I'd give you a taste of what it's like to read the book. You can be the judge of whether these are things you want to hear when you're in the midst of grief. So I'm paraphrasing some of what Job's friends said. But they're there, and they're things we still hear or say today. And let's start with this one. What happened was God's will. We just need to learn to accept it. Well, at least you've still got your spouse. Sometimes God lets bad things happen to us to test us. You just have to go through hardships so God can make you stronger. At least you can take comfort that your children are in a better place. Who wants to hear that one?
Oh, that's so bad.
I guess God just needed more angels in heaven.
Oh, that's worse.
Janelle's muttering back in. Only the good die young.
Oh, golly.
Good. At least God has spared them from future suffering. Job, you don't need to grieve so hard. You need to find a way to get past this. And this is the thing that happens like a few months or a few, you know, years later. You just need to get past it. How unfair. Well, you know, other people are suffering worse things than you are. How insensitive. Here's a Bible verse that I think will help you. Or, I once was sad and depressed, and I prayed. Have you tried praying? Cheer up. Things will get better. You're a very strong person. You will get through this. God only lets things like this happen to very strong people. This is the one I hate. If you'd only had more faith, it probably wouldn't have happened to you.
How about, I know how you feel. I just lost my
dog. Oh, I have that one in here. You must have done something bad to deserve this. Yeah. I think God will use this experience so that you can use it to help others.
Don't care.
Wow, this really happened at a bad time, didn't it?
And it could happen at a good time.
Job, don't you want to move on? Don't you want to live anymore? And the list goes on. Of these cringe-worthy things that we've probably said sometimes or heard it or said something remarkably similar to this. When my friend's husband died, these were a few she heard. My dog just died. I know how you feel. Or this one, I didn't come to the service because I used to work in a nursing home and I just dealt with too much death. Words that make us gasp. And I'm going to add a few more things that we shouldn't say that seem helpful at the time, but these are the things we don't need to say either. I said them though. What can I do for you? What can I do for you? Or let me know if there's anything I can do for you. They sound good. They do. The thing is that when people are in the midst of grief, they can't think. They're not going to tell you what you can do for them. So it's a cop-out to say, let me know what you need. Let me know what I can do for you, because they're not going to. You just need to show up. Because they're not going to be able to tell you what they need or what to do. Now imagine that you've been sitting like Job there for hours or days or weeks listening to these words. Words that told you what you could or could not or should not feel. Words that denied your experience and tried to get you to feel another way or do something that you didn't feel like doing. Words that made you responsible for figuring out your own needs when you have no capacity to do so. Is it compassionate? Is it comforting? Is it healing? Fortunately, there is another way. Just as Job is at his wit's end, God intervenes, gives the friends a tongue lashing for their insensitive and misguided words and bad theology, and reminds Job that things are not always as they might appear. God knows better than everyone, Job included. And God will always be there to see things through to completion, just as God has been there to create and sustain all of life for all of time. What we need to remember is that God is always there, even when we can't be. God is there even in our pain. God can and will companion us through the most difficult of times, allowing us to be exactly who we are through it all. And this is what God offers. So we, first of all, can sit in God's presence and find comfort there, and then we need to give it to others. Because God often comes to people, through people, and works through us to bring comfort to others. We can be companions to others in times of good for sure, but we definitely need to be there in times of trouble. Because we can companion people through their journey to wholeness and allow others to companion us through our difficult times. This is the way of comfort and compassion. Most of the time, there are no words. Just presence. Just do for others what needs to be done. Deeds of love and kindness. Send notes. Give them food. Oh, and give them to them in disposable containers so they don't need to remember who to give them back to. Do their laundry. Clean their houses. Look after their yards or their cars. For children, find some activities that they like doing and do them with them. For teenagers, take them out or give them a gift card for iTunes so they can listen to music, because this is important. Let them be with their friends. This is actually the space where healing and hope are found, in the moments of caring, in the days and the weeks and the months after a loss. And please don't expect a response from these people. Sometimes they aren't able to right away, and they may not feel appreciative in the moment. You don't need appreciation. They'll get it. And afterwards, they'll be very appreciative. But in the moment, they're just numb. So just quietly care. When we can be there for others and let them be fully embraced in the compassionate love of God, healing begins, and eventually people will find the light again. Grief is hard. Love is stronger. We remember that as we prepare today to come to the Lord's table, where all are invited to come, where all are invited to share, where all are embraced with God's comfort and love. So I invite you to prepare your hearts now to come to the table as the choir shares with us a communion piece.